Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Let's Chat Reality. I'm Michael.
And I'm Molly.
And we are here today to discuss episode 4 of Survivor 49 with a very special guest. We have with us from Survivor 45 and now the creative lead at RHAP, Brandon Donlin. Brandon, how are you?
Well, I've never heard my title audibly spoken before. It's so fun. I asked Rob what my title was, and he was like, just make one up. He's like, whatever you want it to be, that's what it is. So creative lead, pretty good.
Yeah, it sounds good, and I think it fits. You're incredible. We love all the social media. Everything that you do for there is amazing, has just brought it another level up, and the title sounds pretty good.
Oh my God. Can I, before we talk about the episode, tell the story about you that I have? Do you know the story about you?
I don't know. What is it?
I forget now where I was flying. I think I was flying to Miami, I think. And there was a show that was announced, reality TV fan, posted about a singing competition show wherein everybody is locked in a house and then you get voted out. And then you, Michael Horn, before we had ever interacted before, you just responded and you said, this sounds like a Brandon Donlin fever dream. And I am 15,000 feet in the air, and I started crying. I was so moved by like the idea that like my whole life, that's a Brandon Donlin fever dream. Like I would dream that up when I was 13 and when I'm 23 and now my current age, you know. And the idea that I have somehow landed in a spot where somebody else knows that about me, somebody that I've never interacted with, like really moved me in like a real deep way. I sent it to my parents. I mean, this is crazy. So I am forever indebted for that, but it is unbelievable that anybody, I got anybody to hear any of my fixations that I've had my entire life. And a singing show where you vote people out is really my scene. It's really, really my thing.
Well, the reason why I even knew that about you, because I mean, that is me too. So I anyone that I can find on reality TV or podcast or whatever who shares those passions with me, I'm going to remember that. And oh my gosh, I can't believe that you even remember that. That was a little while, I guess almost about a year ago now, probably. So
crazy.
That's incredible that you remember that. Thank you. That that makes my day to hear that.
Stop it. It's really, I've never forgotten it. And I'm so thrilled to now be here. I'm on your home turf. You know, I'm very seldom on anybody else's home turf. So I'm thrilled to be on your home turf.
Oh my gosh. Well, we very much appreciate you coming on. Excited to talk Survivor. But before we do, let's just kind of get a little bit into you first, Brandon. We always like to ask our guests when they come on here for the first time about your reality TV origin story. So I feel like I kind of know this answer, but for anyone who doesn't, what was like the first show, first episode that you remember watching of reality TV that really got you hooked?
That's a great question. So I normally, like when I've been asked this, it's been through the lens of Survivor. So I always start with September 2008. I see Survivor Gabon for the first time. I'm 11. But pre that, like people make like references to Nickelodeon shows and to like a SpongeBob or a Disney, whatever. And a lot of them go over my head because my childhood was like spent on the Game Show Network. Like I was only ever watching Your Dog Eat Dog and Your Weakest Link and all that fun stuff. I watched with my parents. We liked American Idol, obviously, like every other household. I was a little bit too young for seasons 1, 2, 3, but like from 4 to 9, it was my favorite thing in the world. We liked, unfortunately, that the current president of the United States had a reality competition show that my family and I liked a lot. And it sucks that I love the program and now I don't want to revisit it because the sight of him makes my stomach hurt. But I mean, my favorite movie has always, my entire life, been Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, just because I think, you know, 4 or 5 year old me loved the idea of like the systematic elimination of it all. Like it's like a fun house that like one person gets to leave, and it's, you know, I don't know why that has always like captured me. But I see Survivor, like I said, in 2008. I watched Big Brother 10 the summer before that, and I was hooked on that. So that was my intro to like a CBS reality television. I always thought CBS was for old people, which I don't know why I ever got that in my head, but my whole childhood, it was like nothing was on CBS that I watched as an 11-year-old. But like, you know, Fox has American Idol and ABC had, excuse me, like Extreme Makeover Home Edition. Like I was covered on all the other channels.
Yeah.
But yeah, for whatever reason, my teacher in sixth grade told us all that she loved Survivor. I didn't think that she liked me. I said that on Survivor. So I watched it because I'm a kiss ass and I wanted her to like, I wanted to talk about something with her the next day. And again, I said this on Survivor, but it was like the only like religious experience I feel like I've ever had is like I'm watching Survivor and I'm 11 and I'm like, oh my God. And it like the thing I again, I'm quoted in saying this. It's like there's some higher power somewhere that is like, if you want this, this is yours. You gotta let me know you're in, because this is it. And then I remember being like, all right, let's see it. And then it's been a long road and now we're here. Now I get to fucking talk about it. It's crazy.
Yeah. And something that I'm so interested in is like, you know, for somebody who was such a big fan of Survivor before going on, how has watching the show for you changed since actually being there and now watching it kind of from a first person perspective?
This is a sad answer. This is not a fun answer, but it is something that I think is really beautiful of like I can now like, I was so forever, like I've live streamed Survivor from a viewing. Like on my senior year trip in high school to Florida, I watched the Worlds Apart finale from the Blue Man Group. I like found some janky feed on Safari in 2015 and I watched it. I watched the second chance reveal amidst the Blue Man Group. And now like if I miss the episode, granted I live tweet for Robin's podcast, so seldom do I miss the episode, but like I really feel blessed that like I don't feel like I have to watch at 8 p.m. You know what I mean? I feel like there are so many people, and again, this is like a sad thing that it bums me out to think about, but like there's so many people that if you go to these viewing parties or I go to the casting calls, right? And there's all these people in line who never are going to get to close the book, right? And I have the opportunity of like, I can't believe the book was even open and I got to open it. And I feel like I think everything in life is beautiful because it ends, and life is beautiful because it ends. And I feel like my journey is over. Like I love being here. I'm so thrilled to not the Let's Draft Reality podcast. I'm thrilled to be here. But the Survivorverse itself, like I'm very, very blessed that I got to complete the circle where other people never get to start the circle. So it's a sad realization, but watching the show is just, you know, I majored in film at Rowan University in South Jersey, which if you're listening to this, it's the first that you're hearing of it. It's a fine school. But I remember the first day of film school, my professor's like, you're never going to watch a movie the same again, because you're always going to notice when the lighting is weird or when there's a boom mic in the shot. Like this is going to ruin in quotes, your love of watching movies, which it didn't ruin it, but now watching Survivor is like when there's a weird cut or like a Frankenbite, you know, I notice those things more than I did when I was autopilot watching on my mom's couch watching Ko Rong when I was in college, you know. That's a fundamental difference, but I still love it. I mean, it's my favorite thing in the world. It'll always be my favorite thing, but it's a weird experience now watching it.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. I can't imagine. But one season that you are watching, Survivor 49, currently. What have been your overall thoughts of the season for the first four episodes here?
Well, we started slow. Yeah. I think that yesterday's episode was
yesterday,
Wednesday.
Yeah.
I think yesterday's episode, I watched it again this morning to prepare for this. Like, it feels like a Survivor episode from 5 years ago, from 10 years ago, like for the first time in a minute. I think that like Say leaves Survivor 48, and I think that all of the episodes after that are like fine. And then I think the first couple episodes of this were fine. But I think last night, like if we're on a roller coaster, we're like, we're going back up because it felt fun. We got like personal stuff that isn't Beware Advantage or Idol adjacent, which I love. You know, I think there's been, and we'll get into it, but like the Shannon talking through religion has, I think, been very polarizing, at least on Reddit and the podcast that I listened to today. Like, yeah. I don't love that. Like, I don't know if I would do that, but I love that it's on, like, it's, I love that it's on the television product that I like. Like, I think it's like, I want to see stuff like that. And it just feels refreshing in the sense of every new era episode for a minute has felt very plug and play. And I feel like this is definitively not that.
I agree with that. I feel like, you know, episode three was weird for a lot of reasons. And then this one, I think we're kind of, you know, we're on an upswing, it feels like. And Jeff kind of said that preseason. He was like, you know, the second half of this season is bonkers, or whatever word he used. And that made a lot of people feel like, okay, maybe the first half is a little slow. So I think we've seen that. And now I feel like, okay, maybe we're starting that upswing that Jeff was talking about. So fingers crossed that we've reached it.
It's funny that the analogy that somebody a couple years ago was like, you got to watch Sons of Anarchy. And I was like, do I? And he was like, yeah. He's like, it sucks until season four. But once you get to season four, you're fly. And I'm like, why? I'm going to watch till season four of a show that is bad the whole time? Which it's so funny that Jeff would be like, hey, you're going to fucking hate this first half of this. But it's going to get so good. It's not even that I disliked it. I was just like ambivalent. The first couple episodes were like, yeah, this is what I now expect from a Survivor episode. But like between last night, between the personal stuff, between the very like nail biter challenge that doesn't end in a puzzle, you know, and I'm curious to hear, like, you watched for the entirety of the show, like for 20 years, like the challenges did not all end in a puzzle. And last night, it's not a puzzle, but it's whatever that thing was, which is 1,000 times more interesting than a puzzle. Like, you know, a puzzle in any form. It's a cooperation building something game. You know, I don't know when we stopped throwing the beanbags. Like, I don't know when that stopped, but let's do more of that. Like, I think that's more fun than just everybody gets to the end of the challenge and then you're racing to put together a snail or whatever.
Right. No, I totally agree. And we were talking about this last week with Molly, like that when you kind of have the same challenge in essence every week, it makes sense that you're going to have the same tribe lose every week. Like, you know, despite all of the, you know, the lack of supplies and all of that, like, I'm sure all of it plays into effect, but also just, okay, you have a tribe that's maybe not great at puzzles, then every week you're testing the same skill, like, you're probably going to get the same result. So I think that might have been a part of it. And now, you know, yeah, we have different tribes and two tribes, but, you know, we're maybe going to get some different results if we have more challenges like this.
And I don't know why. I mean, it really, like, it's so hard, I think, to test for who's going to be good at puzzles beyond people just telling you, like, I'm going to be good at puzzles. But I do think once you realize that it's, like, kind of stopping at that level, like, a tribe switch has to happen because it just isn't, you know, there are some people who are superhuman puzzlers. And that's, like, one of those things that they can tell you, I thought I was a superhuman puzzler. And then I got there and I wasn't. And you know, there are people who go there and they just like, Rachel Lamont said this on ChatBCC, which if you're not on ChatBCC, it's so much fun.
It's so fun.
I love ChatBCC.
Oh my God. I mean, and you get like this insight from folks like Rachel Lamont who's saying like, I don't think that she said it in these words, so I'm paraphrasing. Like Rachel Lamont has a very high IQ, but doesn't have puzzle brain. And I think that's the same for a lot of people. Some people I don't think are as like, I don't know, inquisitive, is that the word? But like can really knock out the puzzles. But it's such a weird thing of like, for so long, like in Vanuatu, they're chasing around pigs and that's an immunity challenge or that's a reward challenge. And then the next is like, they're doing a matching game and that's an immunity challenge. I think that people point to like, oh, because of the budget, we can't do these, we can't switch up the challenges. But like the challenges that were great in Survivor history is like, how much does it cost to do touchy subjects? And you just have to get 8 notebooks. You know what I mean? Like that's, I don't know. I know inflation's hitting us hard, but like it's $20, right? It's $30. Yeah. I think that we've lost that a little bit. And last night, I think was hope that even though we started the challenge a similar way of like, we're in the boats and then we jump and then we come in, like at least we ended on a note that felt refreshing. And I hope going into 50, everything is as refreshing.
Yes. Well, let's start at the top of the episode then. So Sophie and Alex come back to camp as the last two standing from Kelly. They both feel like this proved that they can trust each other in the game and that their bond was solidified. But Molly, Alex did feel worried enough to use his idol at the last tribal. So do you think that Sophie should have taken that as a sign that maybe he didn't fully trust her? Or in her position, would you understand him playing it safe by playing that idol?
Yeah, I mean, Alex was kind of going back and forth on if he wanted to play it or not. And I think he made the right decision in playing it just because at that point, like, you have it. Like, you don't want to be going out with idol, worst case scenario. So I think that he did the right thing. And with Sophie trusting him, I think she understood that it made sense in that moment, especially when there's only three of them. Like, there could be just even one vote was different, then it would change the whole outcome. So I think Alex did make the right move there, and I think they could still work together. I mean, now with the swap, like, they're not together right now. So, like, things can shift and change in the game any day, but I think as of now, like, they would still be working together, and it would make sense, to, like, that they would, because they're still from the same tribe originally.
Yeah. You know, like, I think you can't blame Alex for using his idol there. I there's three people on the tribe. Like, it's a 33% chance you're going to go home, like, if you don't use it. I think you just, you know, probably that a swap is coming, more than likely. So I can't blame him for using it there. And I think that Sophie and Alex, like, if they had ended up on the same tribe here, I think 100% they work together. Like, I don't think they betray each other after everything they've gone through. Right.
I think it's best case scenario for them too to now be split up. I think that you have, like, I mean, you see, like, a Denise and Malcolm, who a lot of people are talking mm-hmm. about this week, of like, they are granted dissolved into the two separate tribes, but then they meet up right back at the merge, and then it's game on again. And I think both of them, like, it's weird when you have two tribes like Uli and Hina who haven't had to vote anybody out or had to, like, everybody mm-hmm. is strategizing, but there's not a lot of actioning that has happened. Like, people are mad at each other. Like, the best person that you can be is, not only are the two tribes mad at each other, which we saw in this episode, but they're mad internally also. Like, people are, you know, if you're on vacation with your family for a week and then you meet three other people, like, it's like, oh, I'm gonna talk shit about, you know, Uncle Mike or whatever, you know. That's like why you do it. That's like why it's great to have new people. So it really, like, this is the spot you want to be in if you're them. And then regarding, like, the idol too, is like, people have said this over and over in the Survivorverse, but, like, if you find an idol, you can probably find another idol. Like, it's not ever worth, if you – I mean, you see it in 46 when four people go home almost in a row with idols. But, like, if you have one, you should just play it. Because, like, if you have the strategy, quote-unquote, finding the idol, like, it would be shocking to go out the next day and not be able to kind of – you know, you already saw all the spots. It could be. It's not in the spot that you just found it. It's probably in one of the spots that you thought it was. And then you go, you know, you just revisit those places.
Yeah. No, that's a very good point. Because, you know, we'll get into this idol that we got in this episode. But it seemed a lot easier than Alex is to me. So, you know, maybe not all of them. Like, I thought Alex was kind of hard to it seemed like, with, you know, the chain and everything, but maybe not all of them are going to be that hard, but we'll get into that in just a little bit here. Really the only other thing we get with Kelly before the swap is that they are sleeping very close to the beach when they are awoken by a wave and notice that their boat is floating away. In addition, in trying to bring it back to shore, though, the ghost of the shoe bandit returns, and it makes Sophie lose a shoe. Now, Brandon, something that I thought was very interesting about this is that they're sleeping very close to the water. And I don't know if maybe it just, like, the water was, like, came closer in than normal, but, like, is that normal that you are sleeping so close to the water that you might get hit by a wave overnight?
One of my flaws in this life is that I don't know when people say the tide is in or the tide is out. I don't know what that means. I could Google it. I've had 28 years to figure it out. I refuse to learn it. I don't know what it means when the water is much further back when they went to bed and now it is further to or closer to where they are. But I think that has happened. That has left. Because, like, I mean, our beach, I don't know what beach there. I think I've lost being able to tell which beach the Lulu beach was. But we had such little beach at every hour. It was either, like, it was 3 feet of beach or it was no feet of beach. And this looked a little bit like that one. Maybe they are on our beach. But regardless, the beach is where you should sleep. I think there's more creepy crawly stuff on the beach. In my experience, I was so much comfier laying on the beach than I was sleeping in the shelter because the bamboo sucks. The bamboo sucks so bad. But I think the danger is what you're seeing is if the tide comes in or out. Yeah. In. And I didn't even know that. That was an ad lib. when the tide comes in, you risk losing your boat, which it's crazy that the boat isn't. I forget. I mean, I guess our boat was so far up onto the camp that it didn't risk ever getting out. But there's nothing's going to go right for these two poor people. It's so sad. We lose a shoe. It sucks to lose a shoe.
I know.
And there's no more shoe pan in either. With... just the water.
Yeah, the shoe pan is in the hospital. Like,
yeah, like seeing her with whoever shoes she took that were not her size was very sad to see.
You know what was weird about that?
For a short period of time.
Well, I don't know why we didn't say whose shoes they were. Like, Sophie was just like, and it's not Sophie's, maybe they edited it weird, but Sophie was like, yeah, these are somebody who was voted out days ago. But like, why not just name them? You know, like, why not have like a posthumous, you know, like we know who they were, you know, it's one of eight, you know, one of three people. I thought that was very fun. I noticed that. Yeah. Why are we keeping it secret?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the next day, as the tribes get to what they think is their next challenge, Jeff surprises them with a tribe swap. Now, Jeff said that the swap was always planned for when they get to 14 players. They just got there a few days earlier than anticipated due to Jake's medevac. But Molly, do you believe him that this was going to happen no matter whether there was a disaster tribe or not?
I don't know. I want to say yes, but then I feel like maybe he's just saying that because he's trying to make us happy and knowing that there's two tribes now and we haven't had that in forever. So I feel like I don't know if it's true or not, but I'm just going to say it probably was planned.
Yeah. I mean, they've just, in the new era, we've never seen a swap without a disaster tribe happening first, to the best of my knowledge. Maybe I'm remembering wrong, but.
That's correct.
Yeah, I don't think we've seen that without that happening. So I don't know if, I guess maybe it was always like, if there was going to be a swap, it would be on day 14, but maybe it wasn't always going to happen no matter what. But we'll never know.
It's weird that they swapped into two and not just three. This is the first time we've ever, obviously, in the new era, gone to two. And I wonder if, I think there was a swap planned, almost assuredly. I think that I would bet on that, but I wonder if, I mean, it's weird. They have a challenge already built for two tribes. So maybe it was to just go down to two tribes of seven. Yeah, I don't know, but it's a weird change to make, especially after there is what you said, a pre-existing disaster tribe. And it would have made more sense to dissolve them. I think it makes more sense to just, cause I think we lose the dynamics of, and granted, I think Matt and Jason played their hand as best as they could, and it's just like an unfortunate situation that they ended up both being on the tribe and outnumbered.
Yeah.
But like, I as a viewer, granted, we haven't seen much of Uli and Hina because of the disaster tribe, but I'm more interested in the pre-existing dynamic of these six people who are ready to vote somebody off, and then they have a new member who they're all trying to clamor for this new person. I think that's where the show is better for that. But maybe because we haven't seen these two tribes and the editors probably know that the first half of the show is going to be focused on the disaster, we didn't do that. But I would have been really interested in seeing, you know, again, you're with the same people, for 8-9 days at this point. Like, I'd be ready to, you know, let's do something. But who knows?
For the first time in the new era, the swap is from three tribes to two tribes. So let's just kind of go through each of those tribes. So first we have the new Kele, which is from the original Hina, which has the majority here. We have MC, Christina, Steven, and Sophie. From the original Uli, we have Sage and Shannon. And from Kele, Alex. Then on the new Hina tribe, we have from the original Uli, Savannah, Nate, Jawan, and Rizzo. From the original Hina, Jason and Matt, and from OG Kele, we have Sophie. So, Brandon, did either of these tribes immediately stand out to you as looking stronger than the other, or did they seem pretty even?
I think the new blue tribe, the new Kele tribe, I think that, and this happens every disaster tribe season, which is now most of them, is like one of the tribes, I think, really suffers from not getting to know them. And I think that is the Hina tribe of this season. Whereas, like, people are saying online, like, Sophie's not getting any confessionals. Sophie Segretti, yellow Sophie. But I feel like I don't know the other folks on the yellow tribe either. Like, I don't know Sophie more than I know a Steven or an MC or a Jason or Matt, whatever. So I think that putting four of them on this tribe, I'm interested to see. I mean, we see in that one, what was it, a couple weeks ago, when Sophie Segretti's not in the majority of the alliance that they're making. That was interesting to me, but I think that dynamic I'm more interested in because I don't know anything about it. Whereas the other tribe I'm more interested in, because I think the major players from each tribe's ended up on it. I think that you like this Sophie Blurdy, Blue Sophie, is like essentially, I think, the narrator of Survivor 49. I mean, she is like, I think the story right now is Sophie Blurdy's story. So I'm already, I think, more interested in where she goes. And then you have, you know, your Rizzos and your Savannahs who are getting a good amount of airtime on Uli. And then you have Nate, who I don't know well, but everything that I see of him, I love him. I think he's so funny, you know. So it's weird. I'm more interested in that tribe. And then I think Matt and Jason are also great. I think Matt is a super unique Survivor character that doesn't get on the new era. And I think Jason is super smart. Jason beast mode at every puzzle that he did, which is like insane, you know. So I think there's pros to both, but I think I was more interested in the people that I feel like I knew more. But I think that's a disservice to the first four episodes not showing the other tribe at all, where most of them are on the other tribe.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. And I really, really kind of hate the fact that they decided, rather than going new Hina and new Uli, which would have made a lot more sense, I think that they immediately put new Kelly at a disadvantage by putting them at the camp with no supplies, no nothing. And I don't know why they did that, but I really just kind of felt for New Kelly. I mean, even though I guess it didn't matter for them quite yet, but I don't know why it would have been like in Survivor Palau, making the Kolk Roar tribe go to Oolong and put them there for the rest of the season, which doesn't make any sense.
I think I say we as if I'm on Survivor production, but we, because of the shortened days, I think we really want to hammer home that this is hard, and this could be hard at any moment, and you can wake up and it's fine and then it's hard. Which, like Survivor Fiji season 14, we have the haves versus the have nots, where the other tribe has a bed. Like, they've got a full shelter and a bed and a kitchen and like a living room. You know, they can play Xbox, and the other tribe has nothing. And I just don't think that's fun at all, because the tribe that has nothing, one, they lose a lot. And then two, like when they win, it's almost like you're being, because they're the underdogs, because the show has made them the underdogs, like you are, it feels almost like forced that you want to root for them, as opposed to like when you have, again, I wasn't there for when Caleb and Emily and Sabaya and Sean lose that challenge, but like you feel for them because you've seen them lose twice because they can't get it together, like in that immunity challenge. And then you feel for them when they win, right, without me, because of the first two episodes and what they've gone through the first two episodes. So I think it's weird. I think there's somebody like who works at Survivor who's like, hey, what if we just made a horrible decision? And they do, every time they're faced with something, there's one guy in the back. His name's, I don't know, Albert. He's got a weird name.
Allison Grodner.
It's like, what if Allison Grodner like is zooming into every meeting? Yeah. It's like, well, I know how we can make that infinitely worse. It just also, it drives me crazy that like we wouldn't just go red and yellow, because it like we've progressed past like this is the disaster. Let's kill it. Like Matt Singh is like, we never have to say Matt Singh again post episode 5 of Philippines. But they don't do that. It's so funny that they don't do that. I also don't like yellow and blue I think red and blue looks aesthetically better, but who cares?
I agree with that. Yeah.
It's also funny that Alex still has to go back to Kelly, and Sophie's like, bye, I'm going to luxury now. But I mean, obviously I think it makes sense that someone from Kelly is there, because if not, like, they'd be like, oh gosh, this is like brand new, and like they don't know where anything is at all. But yeah, it's interesting to see these dynamics so far of what we've gotten.
Yeah. Do you think, Molly, that Sophie and Alex being separated now is better for their games, or being alone on each of their new tribes, or would it have been better for them if they were together on one tribe?
Yeah, I do think that it makes sense that like for them to be separated now, like it's then they can come back and work together, as they like obviously started out the game together and they suffered a lot together too, so they have that trauma bond. But I think now they can build up some other relationships with other tribes that like that will help both of their games in the long run. So I think it's definitely beneficial for both of them to be separated.
Yeah, I agree with that, because I think also We saw that the, and now I think this is different because, you know, Hina and Uli both have all their numbers still, but like we saw that, you know, when two people are on a tribe together, like that can potentially be a target that you want to break them up. Whereas now it's like, okay, just one person, like easy number to pick up for, you know, either side, whatever you're on. So I agree. I think it's better that they're separated for now. But let's go to the new tribes so we get to see them for the first time. And Sophie tries to work her way in with the four former Ulis since they have the numbers on New Hina. And she instantly connects with Savannah in particular. Now, Brandon, do you think that she did a good job of integrating herself into the tribe from what we saw here?
I don't think that you could go into that situation and play it better than Sophie did. Because, yeah. Like, if you are the sole person and you have any flaw or you have, like, poor threat management, anybody who knows how the new era works, which is assuming everybody here, knows that you're going to do five traditional pre-merge rounds and then go into a big thing. Like, this is the time to take the shot. And this is the – like, if you lose, which you might, like – what better way of just being like, this person is solo, all of their tribe members are gone. Like, why not get them out? It's just, it's like a layup to get everybody just to the next round. And for her to get a team of four people who already has the majority to not want to just oust her, but take her along is like, that's a testament to her. That's a testament to how good she is, which it, again, it puts Matt and Jason in this weird spot where they become the de facto minority, but there is still like, they have just as much of an opportunity as Sophie does to join this pre-existing four, and they didn't do it. Like, it doesn't necessarily matter that they are two from the same original tribe. It does a little bit, but it doesn't. It like if Matt blew everybody away with like, oh my god, we love Matt, we want to keep Matt, then Matt would still be there, and then it would be Sophie, yeah, or Jason who would have gone. But yeah, Sophie is incredibly impressive in what she's able to just naturally pull off.
Yeah, I mean, Molly, I think she comes across very unassuming in a lot of ways, I think, which is really to her benefit, because it's like, that's impressive that she is like one of the last two people from her tribe. I think like if she is somebody else, I think you look at that and be like, that's a threat. That's somebody who clearly was able to work their way into a really good position in their original tribe, and somebody that maybe we don't necessarily want to get super deep in the game, but she was able to, you know, to really give a great impression to seemingly everybody that she met here.
Yeah, I mean, I instantly like Sophie just by seeing her preseason interview. So I already, yeah, had that sense that she would do well in terms of just building bonds with people. And so far, she's doing an amazing job, more than I expected her to.
Yeah. Now, somebody who maybe didn't do quite as well is Matt. So Matt is talking about his job working at the airport and is asked by Savannah what he did before that. He was hesitant to say it first for whatever reason, and then gets pushed eventually to reveal that he worked in finance. Now, this makes Savannah in particular worried that he's smarter than he's letting on here. But Brandon, now, as somebody who played with financial analyst Emily Fleming,
sure.
Savannah, is she correct in saying that everybody that works in finance is a sociopath?
Emily being a financial analyst is not in the top 20 reasons why I immediately assumed that Emily Flynn was a sociopath, who is the most lovely person in the world. What Matt does, two things. My biggest call out here is that Matt's been on this beach with the five Hina people for 8 days, and nobody asked him what he did before being and working at the airport. That is perplexing to me, yeah, that nobody asked. But Matt, and this has been circulated through podcasts today, but I don't want to take it as my original thought. Matt screws up by making it a big reveal. Like there's, yeah, you just, if somebody asks you that, you just say, oh, I worked in corporate America, or you like, I worked in finance and then I didn't like it. I wasn't working with my hands or something. It just has to be snappy. But like the way that you make it feel like you add so much gravitas and weight to it is like, okay, that's sketchy. It's not even like the job is sketchy. Finance is not. And Savannah made a very funny TikTok, which if you're listening to this, go watch it. But Savannah explains more of the thought behind the finance people are crazy. I do not think the finance people are crazy. Like I didn't think anything of it from Emily. Like there's no we've gotten to such a place where like every job has these things that make you incredible. Like everybody who gets on Survivor is somebody who like had to say, I'm a blank and I need to blank, blank, and blank in the casting process. Like everybody's job has that through line of being good at Survivor or else they don't put you there. But it's so funny that it's like, we need to get him out because he's a finance guy. Like, sure. I think that, you know, but you're looking for any reason to get somebody out. Right. And like my Sophie reasoning is like, Sophie is in that spot the easiest out, especially if people historically know that these folks who come in from a disaster tribe and emerge tend to go deep, you know, like they because people scoop them up. It's so easy to just and keep your original numbers. But yeah, he screwed up making it a big to do.
Mm-hmm. And it's crazy to me that he didn't have that answer just like prepped. Like, I feel like that should have been the easiest thing to like, you're in Ponderosa for how long? Like you have nothing to do but think. And it's like, I would think that that's one of the first questions that you imagine being asked and come up with a really good answer that, you know, is truthful enough that you don't have to fake, you know, your whole life story. But, you know, maybe if it's something that you think is going to be threatening, like, you know, not giving all the details.
And again, 8 days, he's with the same 5 people. You have nothing to do but talk. You're not going to tribal council. You have nights off. Like, true. You can just, all you have to do is talk. For nobody to be like, hey, Matt, you're an old man. Not old. Matt, you're not old. You're so not old. But
that's
you
your uncle you're talking about,
Brandon. And I love you, Matt. You are older than us. Like, have you always been at the airport or did you do something? Like, the idea that nobody asked that is mind boggling to me. I almost don't fault Matt as much for being stumped because he forgot that he had to answer that question because it's been 8 days. He's like, oh, I guess I'm in the clear. So I hear more of like he looked shocked and it's probably because I'm like, oh, nobody asked me. I wonder, like, are people just not asking Matt questions in the first 8 days of Hina? Like, is it a Matt issue or did that group just not? Again, I was there. I've had COVID for longer than I was on Survivor at times. Like, I was not there for a long time, but I could tell you everything about everybody's life. Like, that's all right. You had to do, you know? So that part was the craziest part of the Matt situation to me.
Yeah. No, that's pretty wild. But another thing that I thought was pretty wild to watch. Now, at this point in the episode, Brandon, a familiar face shows up, and during a commercial break, your face, during the Zoran Mamdani NYC mayoral candidate commercial. Tell us a little bit about how that came about.
It's so I mean, I think I can talk about it. I don't.
Oh, if you can't, we can cut this.
No, I probably can. I signed. If they, you know, what are they going to do? Come after me? I'm in jest. This is fine. They contacted us to do it last week. It was like 24 hours of turnaround time. It was filmed so quick after we all said yes. They DM'd every survivor that like lives in the New York City area. Some people wanted to go so bad and they couldn't be there, which sucks. But like, how often do you have the opportunity to go meet somebody who like literally like I'm on the phone with my dad. My dad's like, he could be the next Obama. Like this guy is like, he's the real deal. So we went to the thing and we were there for a couple hours and we met him and he was so lovely. He lives in Astoria in New York City, which is where I live. And I've been dying to see him on the street every time. This is a Let's Chat Reality exclusive.
Ooh.
Every time Zoran Mamdani, excuse me, says in an interview his favorite restaurants in Astoria, they're all within a block of me.
Wow.
I think he's here. I can feel his presence. I'm going to change my Wi-Fi to be like, Zoran, are you here? Is this where you live? Because he's somewhere close. So, like, what a cool thing to not only like meet the guy, but also be in the same place where he lives. And hopefully in November, you know, it looks like you never want to get too confident in Survivor or in politics. But yeah. If it's good news, then my neighborhood will be a party for a couple of days. And I'm very excited for that. But yeah, listen, you can't keep me off TV. I'm ready to be on. If you're going to point a camera in my face, I'm in.
Yeah, that was really, really cool to watch. But back to the episode itself. Now we get to the new Kelle tribe. Now the tribes is getting to know each other, and Sage leads with a very interesting fact about herself that we saw in the preseason, that she collects blackheads in a jar. Now, Molly, what was your thought of Sage, this being her leading introduction about herself?
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting choice from her perspective of just, like, starting out with that in a new tribe dynamic. I don't know if I would have done the same, but I think Sage trying, I think she's trying to like emphasize more of her quirkiness, I guess, and just who she is as a person. And that, I guess, she wants to make sure comes across right away with this new tribe. And so with that, like, it could have, it could be good gameplay in her part, I think, in some ways with that, just so she's showing that she's being real and actually herself, and that she's not trying to hide that she likes collecting blackheads. So I don't fault her for it.
Yeah, hey, to each his own. I guess it does. It does probably like lower her threat level a little bit, because you think of like Carolyn, you know, like she, nobody thought that she was a threat when she actually was playing a great game, but nobody really thought that about her because everyone thought, oh, she's just like quirky Carolyn, you know, like easy person to beat at the end. Let's just kind of carry her through. And, you know, little did they know that she was playing the game. But yeah, and, you know, not necessarily the fact that I would all necessarily lead, but. But hey, you know, to each his own.
But... well, I haven't said this, I don't think, publicly yet. But it is so cool for me to watch Sage, because Sage, to me, is the closest that reality TV has ever gotten to Hannah Rose that isn't Hannah Rose. Like, they are just, in my short conversations with Sage that I've had since the show has been out, like, they are so similar in how they talk and how they like Sage in her pregame interview with Rob as a podcast is like making faces and doing little voices. And I'm like, oh, that's my good friend Hannah, who I talk to very often. And I think that like throughout however far Sage goes, it'll be like watching, for me, watching Hannah if Hannah did not leave when Hannah left.
Yeah.
Like I'm so excited to just watch what it would be like to see Hannah play Survivor. Because Hannah was the, you know, When we went to Tribal Council, when Hannah leaves, like, she was the only person who wasn't going to go home that night. Like, she's the only name who didn't come up at all. Like, and then she left. Like, she really, she has the magic to do well at these games. Mm-hmm. And I think Sage also has that. And it's like, it's such a Hannah Rose thing to be in that situation. And Hannah Rose, I can say on good authority, does not collect black hats, but like Hannah Rose has so many weird things she can toss out there about like herself, but it is so hard to say something that's like that and not that she is, you know, at that point she was a therapist, or, you know, transitioning out of being a therapist. Like, she would never reveal anything that is good, and she would just throw a joke out there, and then everybody's like, oh, she's kind of chill, like I'm into it. And then you see on this tribe, like, people are suspect of Shannon more than they are Sage, and they're both, I don't question for a second Shannon's like authenticity. I don't think Shannon's putting anything on. I think that like Shannon's super real, but I think that Sage doing whatever Sage is doing is coming off more authentic than Shannon is.
Yeah. That's so interesting. I never thought to compare Hannah and Sage, but that makes, now that you say it, it makes a lot of sense and I see it, but that I feel like I've just always thought Carolyn with her, but Hannah might be an even closer comparison. That's interesting. Well, we get Christina and Shannon are bonding over spirituality and their families. They're getting emotional here. And Sage clocks that Shannon has started talking about her spirituality a lot more since the swap on this new tribe. And that makes her think that maybe she's being a bit performative, using it to her advantage. Steven is also a bit skeptical of her, it sounds like. But Brandon, it seems like, from what we've seen the past couple of weeks, Sage is very perceptive. And do you think, though, that she should put that aside to work with Shannon, given that they're the only two Kelly members on here? Or should she try to save herself by throwing Shannon under the bus when she needs to?
I think that I want to be careful with my wording here before I co-sign this take. But I think you have to wait until the person that you're thinking about that in that situation throws themselves under the bus themselves before you throw them under the bus. And I think Shannon is, by doing this, and again, I don't question her authenticity like at all. Like, I think that whatever I have a hard time believing that she would be using this in a like the way that they are describing, but I do think it's a turnoff for people who are not as into it. Like, I 100% co-sign that. I 100% co-sign that people may be observing it to be performative. Like, I don't think Sage has to even do the work at this point. And then by the time, if they go to a tribal council, I think they're all just going to shrug and be like, Shannon. And then Sage like did the thing that Sophie did but in a different way, like on the other tribes. Like Sage ends up like going with this already existing group because they just like Sage more. But I'm curious to see what happens. I thought that, yeah, Christina backstory also beautiful. I mean, what a really beautiful backstory that I think I saw. I don't co-sign this take, but I saw a Reddit comment that was like, seldom have the new era backstories like choked me up, but this one really was moving. I have been choked up by many of the backstories, but I don't want to co-sign that this is the only one. But this was one that I really felt it. Like it really came through. And I don't know why that's, I mean, I think it's a testament to Christina. I shouldn't say, I don't know why. I think Christina delivers it beautifully. She delivers it with passion. And it's just a really, I mean, it's a sad situation that, again, these are the why people like Christina get on Survivor. Not just that, but it's like, this is relatable to a large amount of the country has had to deal with a loved one who, you know, passes away in this way. Christina without that is so interesting and can get on Survivor any season, anytime. You know, not to pull the curtain back, but I met her a couple weeks, months ago. And I was like, I don't know how it took them so long for you. She's like, I only applied. Well, I was like, oh, that makes sense. Like you haven't been lifelong applying, but she has it without you even knowing about this. It was a really, really like beautiful story to be told.
It was. Yeah. No, Christina is like, I feel like if you invent a perfect new era player of Survivor, like it's Christina. She has all the factors, everything you could want in a Survivor player. And I really, really hope that, you know, she's been very much until that moment, she was been very much purpled in this season so far. So I hope that that's a good sign. I hope that it's a slow burn that, you know, sometimes the invisible players early on, that's a good thing that they know they have time to show them to us. So I hope that means she makes it far here. But we then get to the immunity / reward challenge. And Christina brings Sophie her shoe back. So we ended that story, come full circle in one episode here. And Jeff reveals the reward of a fruit platter. Now, Sophie Segretti is not too excited about it. She calls it diet food. Molly, would you be excited to get a fruit reward on Survivor?
Yes, I love fruit. So I would be happy with any kind of fruit platter. And I feel like it's also a good reward because it has a lot of water in it. And like you can get like not just like the nutrients from it, but also, I mean, I guess they get water from the water wells. But like in general, like it's just more filling and it won't upset your stomach in the ways that other food could. So I think fruit is great. I wouldn't complain.
I would. I am Sam Phelan in this instance. I am not a big fruit person, so this would not be the reward for me. But it just like, I don't know. New era rewards. I mean, so far, like we, you know, there are some good ones every now and again, but I just think back to old Survivor and I feel like the rewards used to be so cool. And like you get to see the culture of the place that they're going. You get to see like all this stuff and like huge, like, you know, buffet of food. And it's like, oh, now here's a platter of fruit. I don't know. It wouldn't be exciting for me.
I don't think I was ever consciously hungry. I don't think I was there long enough to be hungry. However, when I did get voted out, like I was not clamoring for a plum or whatever was on that plate.
Yeah.
Like, I walked into the Ponderosa. I said, hey, what baked goods can be made with immediacy and can they be put in front of me like now? I want a sweet treat every minute of the day. So I think like if I'm at my most hungry, granted, Sophie's a Gretty tweeted like, oh my God, I'm starving. Let me grab my banana or something. It's like, yeah. I agree with that. I don't want that either.
I have a different perspective because I do crave like mango or raspberries and blackberries. So I'm like, oh, I love fruit. Like it's just so fresh to me.
I recently have been, I don't want to reheat Sam Phelan's nachos. I too have not experienced a lot of fruit. I shouldn't say
I'm
that.
The same way.
I've had so many fruits that I like, but I was not in my youth open to new fruits. I'm a lifelong apple guy, lifelong banana guy, lifelong cantaloupe guy, but I haven't explored. But I had a clementine recently. Oh my God. I do. I would, if they had a plate of Clementines, I'm all in on the Clementines. I just, you know, the thing about the fruit platter is, how do you know you get the thing you want if there's like three of each thing? You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Like, I think back in the, if it was more, if it was just a bigger or more like, I think even just like, just looking at it, I was like, that's so sad. I don't know.
People got so upset about the idea of Rick Devens hosting or being the leader of the shop. Do you know about this? Season 41, the original
plan.
Oh,
the original idea. Yes.
Was that Rick Devens was going to be a shopkeeper.
Yeah, like the Wells Adams bartender on Bachelor in Paradise.
Yes. Yeah. You could go to him for rewards, which I think when things like this come up, I'm so in on Rick Devens being the shop owner, which is like, hey, if you win this challenge, it's an immunity reward combo. If you win, you get to pick one person who's going to go to the Rick Devens shop of horrors, and you can they can pick between a fruit platter or a box of donuts or something that only benefits them. Like,
right.
I think that's so much more fun than a journey is. Like, I think that's
that's kind of Survivor Gabon, right? Where you had the choice every week. Someone had a choice between like a comfort or a, was it comfort or advantage? Something like that.
It was the comfort, or you could do the, you could look for the idol on the Exile Island.
Okay.
You could,
but
they had an alliterative thing. I'm not remembering. It was comfort or something. But yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Something like that. I think it's fun. I like anything where people get to make a choice and they can choose to be selfish or not selfish or, you know, whatever it is. I like the players having more autonomy. So I like that idea.
Yeah, and it's like it's you get back to camp and you have the box of donuts and then you have somebody like a Christina who verbalizes that she's not complaining about whatever. She's like, oh, I would have rather had the fruit. And then that's a fight. You know, like we get an organic survivor fight. Because I was like, you got donuts? You know, I'm always picking a donut. I'm 1,000% gonna pick the donut. But I think that could add, if you want to do like organic person conflict that doesn't like affect a vote, like losing a vote or gaining a vote or gaining three more votes. Like, I think I'm all in on this. I don't know who I'm gonna email, but that's, I cooked on that. I'm gonna send that to somebody.
Yeah, I like it. Well, then we get to the immunity challenge. And now I've seen a lot of people online here saying that the majority factions of both tribes should have been trying to throw this challenge in an effort to ensure that their tribe gets their OG tribe gets the advantage at the merge. Now, Molly, what do you think about that? Do you think that they should have been trying to do that?
I don't think so. I mean, yes, you can get the idol if you lose, but I think if like you're trying to save yourself and trying to get far in the game, like just getting a whole tribe immunity is going to get you further than maybe an advantage would. So at that point, I don't know. I guess it kind of depends at that point. But in general, I don't think it makes sense to have to throw it at this point in the game.
Yeah, I get the logic of it. I do. And I think that in probably in theory, I feel like it's right that you should, if you are the tribe that you have the advantage, that you should try to throw this to get the numbers. But I just don't think I could ever do it. I don't think I could ever throw a challenge like that, because I just know that the second I do that, I'm going to look so stupid because there's a whole plan to vote me out. And I would never be able to live with myself if I knew that Look, I wouldn't have to try to throw a challenge. I am just going to be naturally bad at all of these challenges. So this is never a choice I'm going to have to make. But I don't think, in theory, if I was going to be good at one, that I could get myself to do that.
Yeah, and then you enter this like conundrum where like if the Matt and Jason tribe, if they got wind that they were going to throw the challenge, they're trying 1,000 times harder. And again, like the spot in the game that you're at, you're 2 rounds from the jury. Like, I'd rather just like be on, I'd rather be closer to being on the jury than with these two people and then figure it out later than risk throwing it, risk something crazy happening. You know, if you all vote for Matt, Matt votes for, you know, Matt plays a shot in the dark, you don't split because sometimes you forget to split and then, you know, somebody ends up going home. It's just not worth it. I seldom think that throwing the challenge is, even if you are 1,000% sure, the way the new era works is that like you can never be sure, you know. Yeah. In like Vanuatu, I get throwing a challenge because there's not going to be all this crazy shit that happens at the 11th hour.
Sure.
But I think now it's like, you know, you just have to, you know, there's a saying, I forget what it is, but it's like, you know, get on the train and keep going or something. That's nothing. That's never been a thing that anybody said.
Sounds good to me, though. You know, I'll take it.
You just have to, like, plow through.
Yeah. Well, Kelly wins immunity here, sending new Hina to tribal council. Now, back at Hina, Rizzo tells Sophie about his beware advantage, which I think, again, I mean, we talked about this earlier, but props to Sophie. I mean, she got not only in with this group, but fast enough that she's already getting information from the majority here and learning valuable information that, you know, I'm sure she'll be able to use to her advantage. So he gets the clue to the idol, actually not by his own doing. The rest of his team, the old Yuli, looks for it and finds it for him, and then he finds out that he has to find the idol tonight or he loses his vote, and the idol is dead, which I didn't realize when Alex did it, that he only had that one day as the option. I don't think I knew that the idol would be dead. I thought he would just not have a vote until he found it, so that was news to me, I guess, but maybe not to anyone else.
I do think that if Alex didn't have to play it, even if you go to a tribal council and then you don't end up playing it, I think it is great to have like a fake idol that looks real for like later in the game. I think that like it's like you're just adding a prop that you can, and then you have the paperwork also, and it's probably easy enough to like rip the part where it says that it's only good for one time. I think that it's a nice thing to have in your back pocket, even if it is like it almost may do you better it being dead than it being alive, you know?
Yeah. I mean, look how Parvati in AU versus the world used her knowledge as power. She couldn't actually use it at that moment, but the fear of that got her to get exactly what she wanted there at that tribal. So that can sometimes be a very valuable tool. But Brandon, this seemed so much easier to find than Alex's idol to me. Do you think, just as someone who's been on these beaches and has a better perspective probably of how big of a space this is, that this was harder than it seemed on TV?
I think that they were it looks harder, but I think that I wonder how much we are like, because the disaster tribe at that point is the disaster tribe, they're making it look like it's longer because it's like, look how much these people have to earn, whereas like now we're 15 minutes away from tribal council, we kind of have to yada yada over it. Like, I do think fairness wise it's probably equal, but like the ball and chain sucks so bad.
Yeah.
It does suck, but I wonder, and I think the ball and chain, what I don't like about the idols is that they rely so heavily on another person helping you, whereas Rizzo's really doesn't. Like, granted, right, Savannah and team find it for him and then give him that second thing, but if he were to have just found it, he can go do that by himself, whereas the ball and chain, you know, if Trashy Annie, you know, dearly beloved, if she finds that, she may struggle, maybe she won't, I would probably struggle with the ball and chain, carrying it around, but that is something that I wish the idols didn't do, because the idols that, you know, Marianne finds the idol, doesn't tell anybody about it, whips it out at the end and then wins. Like, I think that they're more interesting when other people don't know about them.
I agree with that. I think that, yeah, I think there's a happy medium somewhere, because there was a point around the Russell Hands era where it was just too easy to find idols. Like, it was like you look down at the ground and there you got three more idols. But I think now we've gotten to a point, like you said, where it's like, you can't even find it without telling two other people. It's like, okay, now we've gotten to a point where it's probably too hard to find these idols, and we should make it at least available to find for one person who can do it by themselves secretly and you know, have that secret to themselves if they choose to. So I agree with you on that. But he does find it. So he does have his vote back, and the former Ulis debate whether to vote Matt or Jason. Those are basically the only two options for them. And Matt and Jason have very different strategies here to save themselves, which I thought was very interesting. Jason tells them that he is going to use his shot in the dark as a way to get them to feel like going after Matt is a safer option. But Matt proposes a whole alliance. He goes over to Juwan and he even names it. He calls it the Section with Jason and Sophie. And the four of them would vote for Nate. So, Molly, whose strategy did you like better here?
In the moment, it kind of seemed like Jason was just kind of giving up in a way of like, okay, well, you're going to vote for me, I'm just going to save myself. So I felt like he wasn't really trying as hard. Like, Matt, like, actually was, like, trying to play and, like, build an alliance, even though, like, kind of too late at this point. But, like, I appreciated at least the effort that he put in saying, like, well, I want to work with these people. Like, maybe they'll work with me. But obviously, they just don't have that same trust in him that he was hoping. But I think that I would go with Matt's strategy here as being the better one.
Yeah, I mean, he was trying. He really was, you know? Do you think, though, Brandon, that Jawan should have been more receptive to this, being that he was on the bottom of the former Yuli tribe?
I hear that, but I also think that, like, I think Jawan understands that, like, whether he's at the bottom of the four, he's in a four, and right now the move is just to progress, which I like. I just, it's, you know, I wasn't there. I'm only seeing what the TV show is telling us. But, like, in the event that Jason were to have gone home there, we would be having this rhetoric of, like, oh, Jason played worse, where I think they both equally played poorly. I think the move in that spot is, like, if you can suss out that Sophie is now joined the four and they're the five, your only job there is to throw the other person under the bus and mm-hmm. do it convincingly enough to where that person is the bigger threat than you, that you should take out at this point. Whether that's Matt saying, hey, listen, I love Jason, but Jason is more connected over there than I am. Like, I'm at the bottom over there and Jason's not, or what have you. That is the better play. I respect Matt 1,000 times over for trying to make a move in a game that is, like, you know, you shouldn't be passive in. Like, you go there to not, you don't wait 15 years watching on your couch to go there and be passive. Like, I respect that a ton. I just think for this move, it was wrong. And I think Nate being the target, I think is the most wrong of the four that you could have picked. I think there's even, you know, again, I'm not there. If Matt can suss out a little bit, we see in the preview for next week that Savannah says something about Jawan being annoying. If Matt for a second can suss that somebody finds Jawan annoying, go for Jawan. Like, just be like, let me join your four. You don't trust this person. He can flip on you when we merge. Like, that's who you should get out here. If you're going to permeate the four already. But Nate just seems like a, and again, we must not know something that happened there, because it just seems so baffling to have gone for Nate.
Yeah, I think this is probably the fourth time I've said this, but I think that this is, again, how impressive Sophie was, that she was able to get in good enough that she got the information that if she needed to, she probably could have been able to suss out kind of where everyone was on the Yuli tribe in the rankings. And she would have been able to go for the right person if she needed to. And, you know, just that Matt wasn't able to integrate himself in with them as well. He didn't have that information. And so he's, you know, kind of playing a, no pun intended, kind of going for a shot in the dark and just kind of picking a name and picking who I guess he thought was seemingly the biggest threat, but that's not necessarily the person in the worst position who's going to be the one that they're willing to go for. But then Nate does want Matt out here, since of course he tried to form a plan against him. But Rizzo and Savannah think that Jason is the bigger threat, who doesn't seem too willing to work with them. He, you know, made it very clear that he really, you know, seems to want to go back to his original Hina tribe. So they'd prefer getting Jason out. So Molly, who do you think is the better target there between the two of them?
Yeah, I honestly do think that Jason would have been a better move for them here, because he is stronger with those original Hina members, and Matt already being on the outs of their tribe, original tribe, like, he probably wouldn't work with them as well as, like, Jason will go back with them and then try to get out Uli if they were outnumbered in that sense. So I think for Jason, like, if he were to be voted out here over Matt, that in general, like, for the longevity, like, could be good for them, but maybe they just wanted to be, like, well, I guess Matt was the one who is really more strategizing here and at this time in the camp, and like I guess in general at this moment, like, he kind of was already on the outs too in their tribe dynamics, that it seemed that he was the better move here. But I honestly thought there could have been a switch up, like, it seemed that in their conversation, because they felt so much like, oh, like, Jason is a bigger threat, that they should get him out here, but it ended up not being that way.
I do think that Matt's goose is cooked the moment that he is strategizing against that four, but I do think that if Matt's pitch is like, listen, and this is like guys who go on Survivor who are not 28 years old. They're a little bit older. Like, they're all like loyalty, loyalty, loyalty. They love loyalty. If Matt goes to Nate and is like, listen, we get Jason out, I'm on the bottom of those crew. Like, I'm with you. Like, let me join with Sophie, join your four. Let's make six. And let's just, if we have to go back to tribal, we'll worry about it then. Like, I think that's the pitch, rather than if you do something that is viewed as like duplicitous and you're going for Nate in that move, it's hard to walk it back and be like, no, I'm loyal. Like, I'm loyal to you guys. Which again, I respect a big move, but I respect a big move. And again, like, you're drowning at that point. Like, Jason and Matt are both drowning and they're trying to grab whatever they can. So it's all like, I'm armchair quarterbacking, you know, but I think that the best move, especially when you are like a guy who I can see in a confessional, if Matt is in episode 9, like, I'm loyal to the people that I started this with, I'm loyal to the people that saved me, you know, that's just like the kind of guy that Matt seems to be. Like, I would have leaned into that more.
Well, Matt is voted out in a 4-2-1 vote. So, Brandon, do you think that Savannah and Sophie, who were the two that voted for Jason, do you think that they knew that Matt was going home and split the vote just in case of a shot in the dark or an idol, something like that? Or were they just out of the loop?
Oh, no, I think they knew. I also think that, again, that is like, even if they're going to split, I think it is a sign to Jason of being like, they saved me, but they're still not with me. Whereas if they really valued keeping Jason in the fold, they would have like, and it's, I think it's silly survivor strategy to just go all in. Like, you should always have a contingency plan. But I think that Jason's, you know, little warning light should be like, oh, I was the, if this happened, I was the contingency plan, which again, kind of drawing dead in the situation. If they go back to tribal, it like, it doesn't look great unless he can make some sort of inroad. But I do wonder what that signals to him of like, granted, it's the game. Like, what else are you going to do? You're not going to throw a hinky vote on somebody in that core four, because then that makes issues for the four. But I do definitely think that Sophie and Savannah knew the deal and they had plotted that beforehand.
I agree with that. That would really surprise me if the two of them were just kind of like left out. But it was interesting because we didn't see that being discussed. So I wasn't 100% sure whether what the case was there. But I feel like we're going to probably see, like, when, you know, at the beginning of next episode, they'll come back to camp and we'll get a little bit of an explanation as to what the plan was there. But we will wait and see for that. But anything else that from the episode before we move on? Anything else that either of y'all wanted to bring up here? All right,
I'm good. I think we've covered.
I think so. Well, Brandon, before we let you go, I would be remiss to not ask one question about the very quickly approaching Survivor 50. Earlier this summer, you hosted the incredible Survivor 50 Files for RHAP, where you talked with people who played with each of the returning players. Now, was there anything you learned while doing that, or just in general, that you're most excited to see from Survivor 50?
The biggest takeaway from that whole process for me, which is so funny, the biggest takeaway was like on the second interview that we did, was that like Colby's ready and Colby's coming in hot, and Colby's like, the whole casting process, like, you're hearing all these people that are rumored, and Colby was like, you know, in there but not in there, and then, you know, and the whole time I'm wrapping my head around, like, why would he want to do this when he like actively didn't look like he was having fun or was having any fun on Heroes versus Villains. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I talked to Tina Wesson, who's lovely, and it's still like, it's evergreen. Go listen to it if you haven't listened to it. And she's like, he is disappointed in himself about how he treated something that made such a difference in his life. Like, he now, like, you know, the analogy that I made, which is it's a different thing, but it's close enough, is, you know, Alfonso Ribeiro, like, has interviews about how he has this, he detested for a long time the Carlton dance, because it's like, you know, you're in Disney World in line and somebody comes up to you and is like, can you do the dance? Like, he doesn't want to keep doing the dance, and he didn't want to do the dance. And then he's on Dance with the Stars season 19 in the fall of 2014, I believe. He does the dance and then he wins the show, and now he hosts the show. You know what I mean? Like, I think at a certain point, you know, you can go through phases, but the thing that made the biggest difference in your life, like, you wrap back around, and I think that's where Colby is. And he's like, this is my dance, for lack of a better phrase. And he's like, I should, you know, this is the last time I'm going to do it. Most likely the last time that I'll have the opportunity to do it, I should go do it. And really, I mean, people throw out people who would host the show if Jeff were to leave. And I don't think they're going to pick a former player. I think David Jeanette, now hosting Australian Survivor, is going to be like, for 20 years, people have hypothesized, if Jeff leaves, would they let a former player do it? I think if David sucks, they're never going to let a former player touch it. But I think Colby's audition to host Survivor 51 plus. I really, really do think that. I think if Colby puts on what Colby, you know, what Tina and what Colby are saying he's going to put on, I think that there is a very real chance that if Jeff were to bow out at any point, Colby Donaldson is hosting Survivor.
Wow. That would be quite something.
You heard it here first.
Wow. Yeah. No, that would be, well, I agree with you. That was the big thing that stuck out to me too, was the Tina interview with that. And I was not looking forward to seeing Colby the most of, you know, if you were to rank like who I'm most excited to see when the first cast first got announced, he was on the lower end of that. But I am definitely now looking forward to see what his game is going to be like versus Heroes Villains, because it does seem like he's a lot more in it than any of us thought he was. So we will stay tuned for that, just a few short months away. But Brandon, thank you so much for doing this. This was so much fun, and I really appreciate you being here. Where can our listeners find you, for anyone who, for whatever, somehow does not know? And anything coming up for you that you want to mention?
Yeah, I mean, you can follow me on my personal account at Brandon Donlan, but go follow Rob as a podcast. Not to plug a different podcast, a different and much bigger podcast on this podcast. That is so funny. Don't listen. Listen to this one. Don't listen to the Rob's podcast. But we do fun stuff on there. Like Rob and I are working on some fun stuff to do on Patreon during the season. But we're having a great time. Again, like I don't know how I got lucky enough to work for him or to be doing stuff like this. But thank you for inviting me. This is so much fun. I can't wait to be back for 50. We'll do something for 50.
Please come back. Anytime you want to be here, Brandon, we got a spot for you. But thank you guys so much for listening. We will be back next week, and be sure to follow us at Let's Chat Reality on all social media and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. So we will chat with y'all later. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.